Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
So the McCain campaign has begun returning these contributions, and we think where there's smoke, there's fire. We think there's a much deeper story to get at here.
David Donnelly, director of the Public Campaign Action Fund, joins us to talk about his group's call for a Justice Department investigation of John McCain's dealings with oil man Harry Sargent III. Sargent has ties to the CIA and in the Mideast, according to the Washington Post, and he bundles campaign funding for John McCain. First, a news analysis on heightened tensions over war between Russia and Georgia as the U.S. Navy moves to double its force in the Persian Gulf.
The Bush administration is anxious to antagonize Russia, to target Russia on the geopolitical chessboard and at the United Nations. Ultimately also with a view to weakening the structure of military alliances whereby China and Russia would possibly support the interests of Iran.
Professor Michelle Chosadovsky of the University of Ottawa joins us with a breaking story on a major buildup of U.S. naval forces in the Persian Gulf. The Bush administration is implementing a non-binding resolution, 362, calling for a blockade of Iran. A supporter of the resolution, Democratic Representative Robert Wexler of Florida, said it wouldn't authorize military action. Professor Chosadovsky says the current effort toward a blockade is an act of war. On August 13th, Russian government spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Russian forces remain in Georgia as a precaution, telling cable news network Russian troops have not broken a ceasefire, but deployed a column from Gori as part of an effort to demilitarize the nearby zone to South Ossetia. He said they had no plans to head for the Georgian capital of Tbilisi. Sergei Lavrov, Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation, wrote in the Financial Times, quote, "Hours before the Georgian invasion, Russia had been working to secure a United Nations Security Council statement calling for a renunciation of force by both Georgia and South Ossetians. The statement that could have averted bloodshed was blocked by Western countries," he said. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev chaired a meeting of Russia's Security Council and, according to The Guardian, said his duty was to safeguard Russian citizens in the former Georgian regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, which broke away in the 1990s. Medvedev also said those responsible for Georgian attacks on South Ossetia would be punished. President Bush has called on Russia to cease operations in Georgia and pull out, and is sending U.S. forces into the region with humanitarian aid, he said. U.S. presidential candidate John McCain has called for punishment of Russia for crossing into Georgia with ground and air forces and says they should be forced out of the Group of Eight. McCain announced he was sending campaign surrogates, Senators Joe Lieberman and Lindsey Graham, to Georgia. Finally, the international press has begun looking into a visit to Georgia last month by U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who is being dispatched once again to Georgia by George Bush. Bush said he wants to, quote, rally a free world in defense of a free Georgia. Condoleezza Rice will meet with Sarkozy first. The Guardian has also raised questions about whether America's initial public engagement with Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili could have offered the misguided hope that the U.S. would defend Georgia in the event of hostilities with Russia. You can find assessments of the U.S. and Israel's arming of Georgia on the webpage globalresearch.ca, along with interpretations of these events. Was the U.S. helping Georgia prepare for war on South Ossetia, which was bombed by Georgian troops prior to Russia's advance into Georgian territory? Joining us next is Professor Michelle Chosadovsky of the University of Ottawa. He is director of the Center for Research on Globalization, an independent research and media group of writers, scholars, and activists based in Montreal, and author of The Globalization of Poverty, War and Globalization, The Truth Behind September 11th and America's War on Terrorism. Professor Michelle Chosadovsky, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be on your program.
You have outlined a very frightening scenario in the Persian Gulf as the U.S. military continues to build up its presence there. What is going on?
Well, essentially, the United States and allied forces have sent a powerful naval armada to the Persian Gulf following the holding of extensive war games off the North Atlantic coast. Now, these war games were held in the last couple of weeks of July under the code name Operation Brimstone. They included the participation of France, Brazil, and Italy. And contrary to normal practice in war games, the enemy was identified as Iran. It was very clearly stated in these war games that they were practicing in view of establishing a naval blockade against Iran. And immediately following Operation Brimstone, the entire task force made up of aircraft carriers and so on sailed for the Persian Gulf. And what we have now is the most massive and significant concentration of naval power since the outset of the Iraq War. I think what is also significant is that this concentration of naval power involves the participation of several coalition countries. All in all, there's some 40 warships moving towards the Persian Gulf. In fact, several have already arrived, and they will be joining an existing armada under the mandate of Central Command, and which consists of approximately 36 naval vessels. That's under a program which is called Maritime Security, but in effect, really what it is, it's a mechanism to block trade with the Islamic Republic. And when you talk about an embargo or a blockade, more precisely a blockade of trade and naval movements in and out of Iran, essentially this is tantamount to a declaration of war. We have congressional legislation which was passed a couple of months ago, Resolution 362. It calls for the enforcement of an all-out economic blockade, including the encroachment of trade and the freeze of monetary transactions with the Islamic Republic. I quote from this document, "The president shall initiate an international effort to immediately and dramatically increase the economic, political, and diplomatic pressure on Iran, prohibiting the export to Iran of all refined petroleum products, imposing stringent inspection requirements on all persons, vehicles, ships, planes, trains, and cargo entering or departing Iran, and prohibiting the international movement of all Iranian officials," etc., etc. Now, this resolution is a bipartisan initiative which suggests that the ongoing naval deployment is supported by the Democrats. It's justified in terms of a congressional resolution, which essentially gives the Bush administration the green light to do what it wants. Because essentially when you implement this kind of operation with a massive deployment of naval power and air power in the Persian Gulf, supported by the military facilities of Diego Garcia base in the Indian Ocean, coordinated via CENTCOM, which is based in Bahrain, as well as U.S. Strategic Command, which ultimately oversees this type of military operation if it gets to actual bombing of Iran, we're dealing with the culmination of a process of military planning which was initiated in the wake of the Iraq War, more precisely in July 2003, with an operation which at the time was called Tyrant, and Tyrant stands for Theater Iran Near Term. Theater means theater war. And essentially that program was elaborated by the Pentagon. It consisted of simulations of attacks on several thousand Iranian targets, war scenarios, and so on, so that in the last 5 years they've been planning this very carefully. And we've reached a point where an all-out attack on Iran is contemplated. That doesn't mean necessarily that it will be carried out, but it's contemplated. It's based on a coalition between the United States, NATO forces, and Israel. Contrary to the situation prevailing prior to the invasion of Iraq, France, Germany, Italy are partners in this military endeavor, and the administration has even managed to enlist Brazil, which is not a negligible entity in the hemisphere. And the fact that there was a Brazilian warship participating in under U.S. command, attached to the USS Roosevelt carrier strike group, I think is very significant. So we are at a very dangerous crossroads in our history. America, in alliance with NATO and Israel, has embarked upon a military adventure. And I think that in very concrete terms, we are dealing with criminal and military agenda, which in a very real sense threatens the community of nations and life on this planet, because a war on Iran would immediately escalate, engulfing the entire Middle East, Central Asian region, from the Eastern Mediterranean to the Chinese border. Afghanistan borders with China's western frontier, the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. It would also spread to a number of countries immediately. Well, Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, Syria would be involved. Turkey would be involved because Turkey is a very powerful member of NATO and has borders with Iran. Pakistan could be involved as well. So that we're dealing with something extremely serious, and it is absolutely essential that people across America take cognizance of what's going on.
Professor Michel Chosadovsky, you have outlined some likely economic motives for this buildup of U.S. naval and air forces in the Persian Gulf as maybe oil. And talk about that and also how fighting in Georgia fits in now, because I know there's information on your website about that and about Israel, too.
Well, first of all, this war is a battle for oil, and because the broader Middle East, Central Asian region encompasses something of the order of 60% of global oil and gas reserves. This is 30 times those of the United States of America, which has less than 2% of global oil and gas reserves. So this is a strategic region, so that the war is fought on behalf of the oil giants. That's not the only objective of this war. Iran is an ally of Russia and China. It has observer member status in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a military alliance essentially between China and Russia and several former Soviet republics. And the events in Georgia have a direct bearing on Bush administration war plans with regard to Iran, because war in Georgia diverts Russia from taking a position with regard to Iran. It weakens an ally of Iran, and essentially it serves to distract Russia from playing a meaningful diplomatic and military role, which might undermine or otherwise obstruct the U.S.-led war plans directed against Iran, or obstruct the naval blockade in some form or other. So that at this stage, I think that the Bush administration is anxious to antagonize Russia, to target Russia on the geopolitical chessboard and at the United Nations, ultimately also with a view to weakening the structure of military alliances whereby China and Russia would possibly support the interests of Iran, both at the United Nations Security Council, but more broadly, because both these countries have extensive economic as well as military cooperation agreements with Iran.
University of Ottawa Professor Michel Chosadovsky, thank you so much for this advanced information about an article I know you're working on right now.
Thank you very much. For people who are interested in getting further information, you can visit our website at www.globalresearch.ca.
We turn next to David Donnelly, author of the book, Are U.S. Elections for Sale?, and director of the Public Campaign Action Fund's national campaign. He says the McCain campaign, despite its intent to take public financing, has conducted high-dollar fundraising events every single day of the week. But even more serious is his group's call for a Justice Department investigation of Senator John McCain's dealings with Harry Sargent III, owner of an oil trading company that received defense contracts worth potentially $1 billion. Sargent became a money man for McCain, collecting money to bundle through the RNC, Republican National Committee. Now there are questions about just where that money came from.
But we're asking for a Justice Department investigation. They'll be the ones to prosecute this. We haven't taken any legal action at this point. Mr. Sargent is a wealthy business executive from South Florida. He has a billion-dollar contract from the Pentagon to deliver oil, fuel oil, to military bases in Iraq. And he is a very prolific fundraiser for candidates. First, he raised money for Rudy Giuliani's presidential bid. Then he switched to Hillary Clinton's, and now he is raising money for John McCain's presidential bid. It's come to light in the last week or two that he has also used his business associates to raise money for him. One of the business associates is a Jordanian man who is an associate with on this billion-dollar contract in Iraq. And this Jordanian has raised money from a variety of different people out in California who have low-income or middle-income employment, people who don't necessarily have an additional $2,300 or $4,600 lying around to make sizable contributions to presidential campaigns. Many of these individuals out in California have told reporters in the last week that they either don't remember making the contributions themselves, or even if they did, they still don't like John McCain and they're not going to vote for him. So the McCain campaign has begun returning these contributions, and we think where there's smoke, there's fire. We think there's a much deeper story to get at here, that this particular bundler, Harry Sargent, the executive who has a billion-dollar oil contract, is potentially doing the same kind of activity of lining up donors around the country, perhaps getting them money to be able to afford to give money to John McCain in an effort to try to get John McCain elected.
This, in principle, is legal. The Republican National Committee has long relied on this kind of bundling to get around new laws that would restrict individuals in the amount that they can give. Can you just explain how that works?
You know, both the Democrats and the Republicans, the candidates in both parties and the committees of both political parties have themselves engaged in what's called bundling activity. They reach out to individuals who have networks of wealthy friends. They ask those people to round up contributions to give to the party or to the candidate of their choice, and they go out and do that work. So instead of Mr. Sargent, in this case, giving his $2,300 to Senator McCain and being done with it, he goes out and raises hundreds of thousands of dollars from other people, bundles those contributions together, and delivers them. And so the campaign knows exactly where, in this case, where at least $500,000 has come from. It's come from this one executive in Florida, Mr. Sargent. The McCain campaign has 63 of these bundlers that have raised at least $500,000. This is the creme de la creme of prolific fundraisers, of wealthy players in the Republican Party, who the McCain campaign and, if elected, a McCain administration will know paid for their election.
I understand that Henry Waxman, Representative Waxman from California, is looking into a document associated with Sargent giving his company permission to cross Jordanian territory. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this case is amazing. Mr. Sargent's company, the International Oil Trading Company, had three partners to begin with: himself, this Jordanian man who's raised contributions for him, and a third Jordanian who's the brother-in-law of the King of Jordan. The oil contract that he received from the Department of Defense allows him to be the sole deliverer of fuel oil to U.S. military bases in Iraq. In order to do that, he has to cross Jordanian territory. In order to cross Jordanian territory, he had to get sign-off from the King of Jordan. The brother-in-law got that letter of authorization. This allows Harry Sargent and his company to get this contract, even though they did not have the lowest bid for the job, because they had the authorization from the King of Jordan, whose brother-in-law was a business partner in this deal. Congressman Waxman and his Government Oversight Committee are beginning to look into this matter, and they've written a letter to Harry Sargent of the International Oil Trading Company to ask him for additional information about this, and I believe he'll be commencing a thorough investigation of this matter, particularly when we're talking about $1 billion in a taxpayer-funded contract that perhaps includes overcharges on fuel oil for military bases in Iraq.
Sargent also evidently has ties to the CIA. In fact, his contact in the CIA turns out to be someone who was on the Bin Laden task force, an anti-terrorism guy. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I have not figured out exactly what the relationship is with Mr. Sargent and this former head of the counterintelligence unit searching for Bin Laden for the CIA. It just has been randomly mentioned in a couple of news stories. I don't know who this individual is yet. We have some hunches because that's a very small list, but we haven't seen it confirmed anywhere. But it certainly adds more intrigue to the story and certainly warrants additional press attention for someone who is deeply indebted to receiving government contracts for his livelihood. And to have someone like this former head of a counterintelligence unit for the CIA as an advisor on this, who someone has also reportedly helped to raise money, it raises all sorts of red flags, you know, for investigators. You know, let me just also say, just reference to Mr. Sargent, I mean, you know, this is an individual that has raised money now. This is for three different presidential candidates in this presidential election cycle. He is clearly president shopping. He is looking to make sure that that the next occupant of the White House is on his side. Now, it can be anyone's guess as to why he wants a president on his side. It could be that he wants to maintain his contract in Iraq. It could be that, you know, a fallout that he's had with the brother-in-law of the King of Jordan will hurt his ability to keep that contract, and he needs the president on his side. It could be that there are serious violations of the law that Henry Waxman will surface, and he'll need to have a presidential pardon at the end of the road. We don't know. But clearly, this individual, this fundraiser, is president shopping in this election cycle.
Well, in fact, Representative Waxman trying to account for some $9 billion in U.S. dollars sent to Iraq through the ministries there. And we get the sense that we might one day learn of a black operation that was going on. But could this money have had something to do with some sort of a black operation? Could that be part of why it's been so secret?
Right. I don't know whether any of these dealings include any black ops for Mr. Sargent's company. He had several companies, just to be clear. He runs a number of different companies. You know, he and his family do, mostly involved in shipping and in trading. They do a lot of delivery of oil or shipping oil back and forth between places. This particular government contract is for his company called the International Oil Trading Company, and it's a partnership with two other gentlemen, and it's actually subject to a civil lawsuit because one of those individuals feels like he's been cut out of the deal. This contract is to deliver oil, you know, across Jordan into Iraq. They apparently have help from a company, a subcontracting company in Jordan. A company has been set up by the Jordanian army to help make sure that the work is done with utmost security. But I have not heard any allegations about black ops or about misuse or lost funds. I have heard allegations, and the allegations have surfaced from Mr. Waxman's questions, that this company has overcharged the U.S. government and the Department of Defense for delivering this fuel oil to U.S. military bases in Iraq.
You know, it's against the law for candidates to receive money from foreign sources, right?
You
have to be a U.S. citizen to make a donation to a U.S. presidential race.
That makes a lot of sense.
Talk about how it matters whether or not you're even a voter.
You don't have to be a voter. You can actually just be a citizen. And some of the people out in California who've made donations through Mr. Sargent's associates were not actually registered to vote. They're citizens. They're naturalized citizens, but they had not actually taken the time to register to vote, but had given $4,600 to Senator McCain.
Those are generous individuals.
They are. I wish I had an extra $4,600 lying around. If I did, maybe I'd pay off my credit card bills or put some money into my the college funds for my kids. It's you know, the kind of disposable income that we see in the presidential campaign of floating around from wealthy individuals, you know, makes you stop and think about, you know, who actually owns our democracy. But is it the mechanic, a Palestinian immigrant who runs a shop out in California? He and his son, is that the guy who can afford to have $4,600 come out of his bank account to support a presidential candidate he's never met, he doesn't necessarily like and thinks he's going to be another term of George Bush. That's what's the incredible nature of this, is that that there's some clear violations. It's very similar to what we saw earlier this year with the Norman Hsu case, who was a fundraiser for Senator Hillary Clinton. He raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, some of it by giving money to dishwashers and to other lower-income or middle-income workers to then collect that money back to be able to deliver it to Hillary Clinton's campaign. So it's the very same pattern. Norman Hsu was prosecuted immediately. He was indicted and prosecuted immediately. These are serious charges, up to 5 years imprisonment for each charge, each violation. This case needs to be prosecuted immediately. There's enough evidence in what the newspaper reporters have already dug up, and there's enough evidence that we've presented to the Justice Department to move forward with an investigation and an indictment and perhaps even prosecution.
David Donnelly, have you heard anything yet from the Justice Department, and where does your organization go from here?
We have not heard yet from the Justice Department, and typically the Justice Department is very careful about when it says it's beginning investigations. So we were not anticipating hearing anything. Because there are so many jurisdictions in play here, there's the Central District of California, the U.S. Attorney in that Central District, because that's where the donations came from, the Southern District of Florida, that's the U.S. Attorney's office there, that's where the foreign national as well as Mr. Hart and Mr. Sargent live. And there's a separate case, which we haven't talked about, which involves Hess Oil, Hess Oil Corporation, with possible straw donations, very similar pattern, without all the intrigue, originating out of New York. So the Southern District of New York, the attorney, U.S. Attorney's Office there, needed to be involved. So we went straight to the Justice Department to urge them to put whatever resources they needed to look into this. We don't know when we'll hear back. We hope it's soon. We hope that there's some additional news and that Senator McCain actually takes this a little bit more seriously than his campaign currently has.
Well, this is another story of, in a way, bundling. This has to do with Hess employees donating, I think it's, is it 28,000?
Yeah. In the week following Senator McCain's reversal on offshore drilling for oil, there was a gusher of contributions from the oil industry. The biggest part of that gusher came from employees and family members of the Hess Corporation, a major offshore exploration entity that is maintaining huge operations in the Gulf of Mexico and would like to expand them for drilling for offshore oil. 10 donations of $28,500 are written to a joint fundraising committee that the McCain campaign had set up with the Republican National Committee. In addition, one of those employees, an office manager for Hess, had her husband also write a $28,500 contribution. So, over $300,000 in contributions just from this one company and his family members.
David Donnelly, thank you so much, and we look forward to hearing more about this as this case unfolds.
Thank you.
You can learn more about David Donnelly and his group's letter to the Justice Department calling for an investigation of John McCain at their website, campaignmoney.org. It has information about public financing of elections, reports about John McCain and his oil money. Plus, they have another website tracking lobbyists, including some within the oil industry, now working as fundraisers for John McCain. That site is McCainsLobbyists.com. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program was produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions.